The number of eviction applications filed in Toronto in 2005 increased 10.7%. More interesting, GTA is half of Ontario's applications, and they rose 8.7%, and in Scarborough, it was worst of all. You've gone on record saying you're not sure why the evictions increased, but you have a feeling that there are three main reasons. You want to introduce us to those?
Sure. Most alarming thing is the applications have increased. The reasons are the rents are too high, the incomes are too low, the system is too easy for landlords, and it's set up for them to either evict the tenant or use the tribunal as a public collection agency.
Welcome to Disrespect, exploring the stigma around disability, providing information and interviews to entertain and challenge listeners who care about, or care for, or may themselves have become someone with a disability. On the eve of Toronto's first census of homeless people, Disrespect welcomes Dan McIntyre, Program Coordinator for the Federation of Metro Tenants Associations.
Dealing with a case, a landlord neglected a building for years, now wants, actually then died, and their son took it over and wants to redevelop the area, the hell with the tenants, lost 12 homes so far.
And he really just wants to demolish the building?
Well, he wants to build a high-priced condo on the site.
Yeah.
It's right in the middle of an older section of the city, Dufferin and College, but
yeah,
these type of things that we work with every day. Helping a tenant in Burlington who's getting landlords screaming at him in the middle of the night and all sorts of things. There are hundreds of those every year.
Yeah.
Innocent folks who, after the landlord finally gets around to maybe doing something tonight, finally getting around to fixing the elevators, then wants to pass on those costs to the tenants in the form of an extra rent increase.
Right.
So we go and explain the system and try to find ways to reduce the effect of the application and answer questions and get them organized. This is under the City of Toronto Tenant Defense Fund program. So things go on. And I don't want to paint all landlords the same way.
Yeah.
But in Ontario, you can be a landlord. There's no test. There's no nothing.
I see.
So if you buy a property or you want to rent out part of a property you already own, you're a landlord. Doesn't matter whether you know the act, doesn't know whether you have people skills, doesn't matter whether your tenants can tolerate you or not, you're the landlord. And, you know, if you buy a restaurant, well, you better know how to fry an egg. But if you buy an apartment building, you should know how to look after it, but some do, some don't.
Yeah, I gotcha.
Well, in fact, I work with a program called the Tenant Defense Fund. We are on defense. We're not able to take actions against landlords who don't do their job.
Right.
But on the other hand, if a tenant falls behind in the rent, even a few bucks,
mm-hmm.
landlords have a very easy, well-paved road. Go down the tribunal and do your thing, and then you're going to either get an eviction or get paid. So it's win-win for the landlord. And it was all set up deliberately for that, and it needs to be changed. There is ways to have a fair tribunal. There are ways to ensure that tenants get what they pay for. They get the maintenance that they pay for. They don't have to put up with harassment or other interference, all of which are illegal under the Act on paper.
But there are no penalties.
Well, it's just the inability to enforce and the fact that the tribunal has put that at the end of the queue as far as any priority is concerned.
Do you feel that the public is paying for the landlord's collections?
Well, a landlord making an application pays a $150 fee.
Right.
But when they succeed, the tenant has to pay the fee back to the landlord.
Oh.
And often, with the eviction hanging over their head, tenants will make impossible deals just to try to keep the roof over their head. And sometimes, you know, you have to do that. But other times, they're not able to make a deal. They end up being evicted. And not only are they still owing the rent, but they owe another $150 as well.
I see.
So, you know, if you fall a payment behind on your telephone bill or on your MasterCard, well, there's always a small price to pay, and you know, but you're not risking losing your home.
That's true.
You know, if you're short of money, the landlord has the best protection in the province in terms of, you know, either you're gone or you pay. And then if you're gone, guess what? They can rent to somebody else at a higher price.
So it's a win-win for him.
Yeah. Now, there is some vacant units right now, but the rents are so high on the occupied units, they can easily sustain those vacancies and at the high rents that they're charging.
And you feel that the public is paying for their collections, not only because of this $150 fee that they get back if they're successful challenging.
The tribunal has made evictions applications their priority. They're dealt with the fastest. They issue their orders fastest. They do everything on the fast, on the cheap. And the tribunal, of course, is funded through our tax dollars. It was supposed to be a place where both tenants and landlords could go to get to resolve their problems, but God help the tenant who's got a maintenance problem trying to go to the tribunal to get any help. They're at the end of the line and they don't know what they're doing, and tenants aren't in the business of being tenants, and there's all sorts of barriers put up, and that's why only a few of less than 10% of the applications at the tribunal are tenant initiated.
Oh, I see. So the tenants, knowing this, the tenants don't even try a lot of the time.
No, I mean, you know, people are out making a living so they can pay their rent. They're not in the, you know, they're not able to spend the hours it would take to put a case together, go to the tribunal, show up on daytime hours only, learn the rules of evidence, all sorts of things that are, you know, they shouldn't have to.
Peripheral to keeping a home, yeah.
Yeah, and there are no resources to help tenants in that situation. In terms of representation, we can give advice, some help, and hints, and all those things.
But they don't get any advisors when they go before this tribunal.
Not at all, unless you want to pay for a lawyer. In that case, you're spending more money.
It seems to be another diversionary agency in many cases. But are the tenants eligible for legal aid?
Some tenants are eligible for legal aid. The legal aid limits are very, very low.
Yes.
And so people with just over the line, they have a problem. Except legal aid and legal clinics basically only represent tenants facing eviction, and good that they do, but they don't have the resources to help tenants make applications to the tribunal.
Oh, yes. Even though the landlords pay a much larger fee, apparently, than the tenants and get much better treatment, they're not even the bulk of the funding for the agency.
Well, right. Well, you know, I mean, if you multiply the 64,000 applications last year by $150,
right.
I don't know what that gets you. Doesn't pay for the tribunal, but basically, that money ends up being paid by the tenants as a cost assessment at the end.
Oh, so even the tribunal is working for the landlord so that they can collect from the tenant.
Yes, $150 is assessed to tenant. Now, in some cases, it's never collected and all that stuff, but essentially, it is passed on to the tenant. So again, it's a user fee, if you will. But the impartiality of Canadian justice is really at risk here. But part of it is because the legislation was written the way it was written. But until just a couple days ago, no tribunal adjudicator had ever dared to speak out. Now, Mr. De Bono has made some very dramatic statements that completely support what we've been saying for years.
And who is Mr. De Bono?
He was an adjudicator in the Toronto North office of the tribunal.
I see.
And he, a few months ago, ruled in favor of a tenant who complained that she was evicted by unfair process.
Oh.
And it's almost like the tribunal members are lining up to help the landlord on their appeal, but we'll see how that goes.
What's the reward? What's the reward for the tenant with a favorable appeal?
Well, it means she got to keep her home.
Oh, she's still there?
Yeah, she's a mom with a couple of kids. She was trying to hold down a job. She got a little bit behind in the rent. She couldn't get off work in the time to make, you know, to
the 5 days
and all that stuff. She got evicted, and then there was a set aside. And at the time she was evicted, there was, as a matter of fact, no arrears of rent. She had paid the rent that was owing.
I had heard about this.
Yeah, and now the landlord, for some reason, has appealed. We have no idea what's in it for him. He's already got the rent.
Yeah.
But the tribunal, I'm sure, will be circling the wagons, and this will be a case to watch. But the adjudicator, Mr. DeBono, released 38 pages of reasons just a couple weeks ago, which are a scathing attack on the tribunal. He uses the same types of terminology we've been using, like eviction factory. Huh? Talks about the cheapness and the corner cutting and the favoritism given to landlords in the whole system.
And this dates back to its creation under the Harris Conservatives?
Yes. Now, DeBono was an adjudicator from 2002 to 2005. But, you know, one thing that's interesting, I don't know if you've watched.
So he's seen it both ways.
Yeah. If you read the Toronto Star story, you'll see a quote from Mr. Vince Brescia from the Landlord Lobby Group.
All right. And we're talking about Tuesday, February 21st.
Yes. Vince Brescia was the executive assistant to the Minister of Housing, Al Leach, that brought in the legislation. So, I mean, first of all, you're involved in writing the legislation, then you go work as the head of the lobby group for the landlords.
I see.
What a signal of what, you know, what this whole thing is about.
Mm-hmm.
There's also, in the February 21st edition of the Star, a letter from Harry Fine, former adjudicator at the tribunal, who now is president of Landlord Solutions. What does that tell you about the people behind the tribunal?
Yeah. Who chooses them?
Well, there's a public appointments process that they do follow, but the last step of the process is the approval of the minister.
Oh, I see.
And up until Mr. DeBono, who's quite different, it doesn't matter which tribunal person you go to, you get the same kind of result.
I see. And now for a short break from our interview.
Me and my baby walking down the street, meeting everybody but the chief police. You gotta step it up and go. Yeah, go. Well, you can't stand still, I swear. You gotta step it up and go. We were shooting dice, money on the floor. Up come the law and knocked on the door. You gotta step it up and go. Yeah, go. Well, you can't stand still, I swear. You gotta step it up and go. Money on the floor, up come the law and knocked on the door. You gotta step it up and go. Yeah, go. Well, you can't stand still, I swear. You gotta step it up and go. Everybody but the chief police, you gotta step it up and go. Yeah, go. Well, you can't stand still, I swear. You gotta step it up and go. Shooting dice, money on the floor. Up come the law and knock on the door. You gotta step it up and go. Yeah, go. Well, you can't stand still, I swear. You gotta step it up and go.
Talking with Dan McIntyre, Program Coordinator for the Federation of Metro Tenants Associations, about the high rate of evictions and the function of the Social Housing Tribunal. Given that it is a process that seems to act on behalf of the landlord, what kind of remedy do you see for this kind of bias and this kind of funding engine that only produces one result?
The Minister of Housing has to see this as the scandal that it is,
yeah,
and the injustice that it is, and move quickly. Now, he has replaced the chair of the tribunal, but unfortunately, with all due respect to her, because we have hoped that she's going to be instrumental in making change, the change hasn't happened, and what happened in 2005 was more landlords applied. The legislation permits that. So Mr. Gerritsen has to not only rewrite the legislation, right. He has to revamp the tribunal and change the operating concept from speed to fairness, from evicting and raising rents to protecting consumers.
And that is a costly process, right? And that's one reason the government's resisting it.
Historically, I mean, although cost is always a factor in politics, but historically, no one has ever said we can't be just because it costs too much.
Well, they never will.
Right. So, and it doesn't cost too much to have a just and fair system.
Well, yeah, it's a matter of values, isn't it? I mean, if you say that the just and fair system is the standard, then cost becomes a sort of ancillary question.
It's going to cost, you know, it's a price tag for everything, but that's the price tag that Canadian society has always been willing to pay.
Yeah.
It's only that a government that was basically had all sorts of friends in the landlord community decided they were listening to every single landlord complaint from the last 20 years and write legislation that did what landlords wanted, raised rents and allowed for faster evictions, and then had the temerity to call the Tenant Protection Act.
Of course.
Median income in Toronto is in the 37,000 range, which means that half the people in Toronto are making less than that.
Right.
Now, using the 30% rule, 37,000 means that you can afford about $10,000 a year in rent. That's a $900 a month apartment.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them rent for more than that,
mm-hmm.
and half the people are below that. So you're going to, you know, and many people are in the 50, 60, 70% area.
Mm-hmm.
We stopped building rent geared to income housing, so we have 70,000 people on the waiting list here
yeah.
in Toronto.
Yeah.
All of those public policy decisions have come home to haunt us.
Yeah, and they've all combined.
Yeah, and you know, all the fears that many of us had about the old common sense revolution has also come true. I mean, people were isolated. They set up a them and us society, and people have paid the price for it.
So they've got a them and us consequence now, and they've got a them and us bargaining position, too.
We are a nonpartisan organization, but possibly Mr. Tory will be the premier in 2007 or 2008, and we'll make improvements as well. If he were to be elected, that's up to the voters.
Yeah. Does he have electoral experience that would indicate he would be more empathetic?
Well, he's more center-of-the-road conservative, and he has some people skills that he might listen. But I'm just saying that...
Yeah. Can't get much worse.
That you can't continue a system that simply says, you know, landlords got to get paid or else. And not only do they get paid what they want to get paid.
I see.
Let me give you one other example from sort of a different aspect of this.
All right.
If you lived in rent-geared income housing, and you had a dispute with how much of your income is, therefore how much your rent is with the landlord.
Right.
Let's say your calculations were that you should pay $400 a month. The landlord's calculation is you should pay $500.
Okay.
And it's a legitimate dispute, two separate sets of facts to argue back and forth. If that matter goes to the tribunal, mm-hmm. the tribunal says it's the landlord's right to set the rent's $500.
Are you serious?
That's exactly how they've interpreted the act. So the way mediation is handled is another huge concern there, and has led to some needless evictions as well.
What's the problem with mediation?
Well, the tribunal's version of mediation is any settlement is a good settlement.
That's typical of mediation. Yeah.
Yeah. They try to get cases into mediation, and usually or often what happens is there's something Section 77 of the Act permits mediation to be outside the scope of the Act.
Oh, no.
And what they often write in is if the tenant, you know, a payment plan for the tenants to catch up.
Right.
That's somewhat logical.
Yeah.
But then they put the poison pill in. Should the tenant miss a payment, the landlord can, ex parte, which means without notice, evict the tenant.
And without the right of appeal again.
Yeah, without a hearing, etc. So, you know.
So the tenant will agree to this.
Lost in the mail. Well, yeah, because they're trying to save a roof.
Yeah.
And the other thing that is often forgotten. Even if you want to blame the tenant for falling behind in the rent,
mm-hmm.
all right?
Mm-hmm.
You take a family where mom or dad could have paid the rent, they screwed up, they went to the track,
all right.
whatever. when they get evicted, you also evict their kids.
Yeah, that's true.
And what do the kids do wrong?
Yeah, that's true.
So the penalty is so severe and even punishes innocent people.
Well, we did an interview a year and a half ago, I think, maybe 2 years ago, about a woman who complained that she was mistreated by Hamilton Housing in Hamilton. And they literally left the city. The treatment was so unfair in the apparent attempt to resolve their complaint that they ended up going across the country thinking they could get a better deal. And she and her children, who range in age from about 5 to 14, if I recall, ended up tramping the streets all night. And one of the girls ended up in hospital with what appears to be like post-traumatic stress syndrome. Never experienced homelessness, didn't know what it meant. As a child, doesn't have the tools to cope with it. Understood it was real enough because of the very real effect. And the child's never going to forget this.
Ask yourself why there are homeless shelters in Hamilton and Toronto and all the major cities that people end up in.
And why prisons are a growing industry.
Well, there's that. But many of the people who are in shelters were in apartments, but they simply couldn't make ends meet. And that's what they end up. And you know, if the high rents the landlords were charging were absolutely necessary, that would be a major problem. They aren't. There's all sorts of bonuses, built-ups, all sorts of things in the rents that they could come down quite a bit while landlords still make a living, and we could house more people and have a fairer system.
Mm-hmm.
But if landlords don't want to charge affordable rents, then we should be building the housing and charging affordable rents and keeping it in the public domain.
What do you think about the management of the waiting list? Now, you said yourself it's 70,000, and I guess that amounts to about 15 years for people looking for something like a one-bedroom.
Yeah, some of the waiting lists, somebody said that 50,000 are real on the list, and there's like a bunch that just are hanging on the list. I don't know what that means. It's something about a live list I keep hearing. But that, we're building like 50 units, 100 units a year.
Right.
It's just not going to happen. And even with turnover, people moving out of social housing and whatever, you aren't going to meet that need unless you go into a building program.
John Fraser at CIRA has made the observation that we're almost to the point where all we're building or all we'll have left is enough housing for women fleeing abusive situations, and that's because the numbers haven't grown.
Yeah, well, Toronto Community Housing, for example, is managing 50,000 units. I mean, they're there, but it's, Bob Ray once mused, if landlords don't like playing by rules, then maybe we should take over all the landlords, and that's what, 15, 20 years ago when he was still a New Democrat, which got a lot of flack, of course, from other quarters.
Do we have any indication from Mr. Gerritsen or anybody in the Liberal provincial government, or in fact, anybody in the new Conservative government, that something constructive is coming our way?
Well, Mr. Gerritsen has been saying today and before that the new Tenant Act is on its way, and they've been trying to get it right, which I think what's happened in the last few days is this, that we've surprised them.
These figures?
Yeah, they were being told by the landlord groups that everything is fine right now.
I see.
The vacancy rate and everything else, we're bending over backwards to treat tenants fairly. And now, not only are we seeing more people being subjected to eviction applications, there's quite a few tenants in Kingston who are facing above-guideline rent increases.
Kingston?
Yep.
Okay.
Mr. Garrison's hometown.
Oh.
So, in other words, the surprise is that all is not well. I mean, the landlord lobbyists have made, done their thing, and they do it quite well under these terms. And there was a sense that they didn't have to rush in a new law because the vacancy rate was going to take care of things.
Meaning because the vacancy rate is low? Yep.
Well, that's what the landlord lobbyists are saying. The vacancy rate's high enough, tenants have nothing to worry about.
Oh, I see.
And they're saying the vacancy rate's now high enough, tenants shouldn't have much to worry about.
But it isn't high, is it?
Well, it's higher than it was, but it's still not healthy at all. So these facts have belied that myth, and that's what shook them up a bit.
Well, what about discrimination against tenants with a disability? We had a guy on the show for 6 months who was looking for housing because his landlord said, look, you have a potentially terminal illness, and I don't want to deal with it. Never mind, he didn't have to deal with it.
Tourette's and syndrome is?
Well, why don't you tell us?
Okay. Well, it's a disease that causes people to behave what appears to be totally irrational and make big funny noises and curse and swear and make noise. So, I've heard of tenants losing their housing because they've been afflicted with this. Or not being able to get into their housing. So there's also the fact of the matter is that, landlords at many points in history, very recent history, have been able to pick and choose tenants. That means pick the one with the highest income is willing to pay the highest rent.
Right.
And they could constructively keep people out of housing. The most vulnerable people will be the most vulnerable to this act.
Oh, yeah.
The more vulnerable you are, the worse it'll be.
So your disadvantages will be magnified.
Yep.
Well, I appreciate your time. I don't think people know to what lengths public advocates go to make them aware of these conditions, but as I sit here at the clock in the studio is slashing 10:52 p.m.
My favorite show's on TV, too. But
there's another undocumented price of bad housing policy. People miss their favorite TV shows.
Well, Tuesday.
I appreciate your time.
Okay.
Thanks, Dan.
Anytime, John.
All right.
Bye.
We've been talking with Dan McIntyre, Program Coordinator for the Federation of Metro Tenants Associations, about the high rate of evictions and the function of the Social Housing Tribunal.
Of course, you keep on dreaming every night too about that old train that's going to take you home off the same gang. Call it the chain gang special or any kind of train you want to call it. You put in your time, come to the end of your line, the old train's gonna sound something like this. Take a run on back home again. Woo! Run that train, Sonny, run that train. Run an old train, gang special. Take us out there, back home. Get these old balls and chains, bilboes and shackles off my leg. Take us back again. So we're free again. Whoop that train. Sounds pretty mean. Blow out of us.
In the middle of the show, you heard William Warner, Step It Up and Go, from Classic Blues Volume 2. And at the end of the show, Sonny Terry and Brownie McGee, their Chain Gang Special, from Bleecker and the Blues. Disrespect, we'll be back next week. The show is digitally edited from live telephone and studio interviews.